Hardcore campaigning is nothing new to Chicagoans, and today they did some serious politicking in Denmark. That's where the International Olympic Committee is meeting to decide who will host the 2016 Summer Games. American sports stars and First Lady Michelle Obama are there. And late tonight, President Obama will arrive for Chicago's final sprint, as NPR's Cheryl Corley reports from Copenhagen.
Denmark's ultra-modern opera house sits on an island in the center of Copenhagen. That's where Olympic officials and celebrities gather tonight for the IOC's opening ceremonies, joining Denmark's Queen Margrethe, who had arrived by boat. The Queen said she was keenly aware that this Olympic competition had awakened excitement all around the world. The hopes are indeed high, as are the stakes, as this lengthy Olympics campaign of four cities, Madrid, Tokyo, Rio de Janeiro, and Chicago, nears its end.
Chicago?
2016!
Chicago?
2016!
Earlier today, U.S. Paralympic and Olympic athletes, including track star Jackie Joyner-Kersee, dressed in matching blue tracksuits and mingled with IOC members. At their last group press conference to support Chicago's bid, basketball great David Robinson said the effort is bigger than Chicago or the United States.
This is about the honor of hosting the world. And this is about giving a platform for every athlete and every story to be told.
For Paralympian Linda Mastandrea, it was hard to believe that a defining moment in Chicago's effort is so near.
3.5 years ago, it felt like it would never come. And here we are. We are on the cusp of being able to bring something so amazing to the kids in the city of Chicago, around the United States, and around the world.
And the athletes weren't the only ones lobbying. Plenty of influential people here have been working the IOC crowd as hard as any Chicago precinct captain during a tough political fight. Talk show host Oprah Winfrey has been chatting with IOC members and posing for photographs. First Lady Michelle Obama met with IOC members behind closed doors. And tomorrow she and the president will press Chicago's case one last time before the IOC. In fact, all the bid cities have heads of state lobbying on their behalf. Earlier today, at the Brazilian delegation's hotel, a ballroom quickly filled with reporters who had come to hear President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva root for Rio de Janeiro. Many consider Brazil and Chicago to be the top contenders for the Olympics prize. Lula has said throughout that it's time for the Games to come to South America, which has never hosted an Olympics.
Nós queremos dizer ao mundo, sabe, que nós podemos.
Lula ended his remarks by using a very familiar American campaign slogan. Here's the translation.
We want to overcome and show the world that we, yes, we can do it. And this coming from the American mouth, that's very beautiful. But we never said that because in Brazil, we were accustomed to say, we cannot do it because we are poor countries, we can't do it. No, this time we're thinking and looking towards the world and say, yes, we can. And we will do it and organize these Olympic Games. Thank you very much.
No word yet on whether the yes, we can theme will be a part of Brazil's presentation tomorrow, as both Presidents Obama and Lula address the IOC. Meanwhile, Tokyo, which hosted the Games in 1964, will have Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama on hand for tomorrow's presentation. He'll pitch Tokyo's bid as a festival in the heart of the city. Madrid has the backing of the still very powerful former IOC president Juan Antonio Samaranch. He and Spain's King Juan Carlos support the plan to turn the bulk of the Olympic Village after the Games into affordable housing. The IOC will begin hearing each of the four cities' final presentations in the morning. Cheryl Corley, NPR News, Copenhagen.
Finally, we end this hour with a little comedy from a place that is not exactly Laugh Central, here, D.C.
That's right. Last night, D.C.'s Improv and Comedy Club held the 16th annual Funniest Celebrity in Washington contest. And D.C.'s Funniest Celebrity? No, it is not Robert Siegel.
No, somebody much funnier than Alan Greenspan. It was White House Economic Advisor Austin Goolsbee.
Goolsbee picked up where Saturday Night Live's Subliminal Man left off, adding snarky interjections to his monologue.
Here he is on his close relationship with the president.
I'm not saying that in 1961 we were like separated at birth in a village in Kenya. What I'm saying is,
and on the country's top financial institutions.
I would like to say one thing about some of our major banks, ingrateful bastards. The thing about them.
On the economic crisis.
It was okay because as we took office, you know, it was an all-star team of economists and we basically knew what to do. Panic. What we were coming in is, let's react the right way when things happen. Let's just sort it out and start from the fundamentals. How do we throw money at this problem? And the thing is, most of the lessons aren't recent. I mean, it's been a long, long time since things were this bad. So we kind of had to go back and look at the old textbooks, Karl Marx, Trotsky, and the thing that...
And here's Austin Goolsbee on Republican presidential contenders in 2012.
You know, there's a lot of governors. There's obviously Sarah Palin, wingnut, from Alaska, who's a former governor, quitter, and you just cannot... You cannot rule out that by 2012 there'll be a warrant for her arrest, that she will be the nominee.
That's White House economic advisor Austin Goolsbee, the winner of D.C.'s funniest celebrity contest. Keep your day job.
There is, though, Robert, this truth that is not so funny, and that is that the contest, you know, is supposed to raise money for charity, but the Washington Post reported this week that the organizers haven't actually made any charitable grants over the last 5 years. They say the expenses and the salary for its founder are just too high. Creeps.
Cash for clunkers made August boom time for auto sales, and the end of cash for clunkers brought the increase in sales to a clunking halt. General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler all say September sales were down more than 30% from August. As NPR's Frank Langford reports, those numbers are raising new questions about the program's effectiveness.
The Cash for Clunkers program lit a fire under car sales last week.
It has been successful beyond anybody's imagination.
A group of lawmakers scrambling to refuel the Cash for Clunkers program before Congress takes its summer break.
Cash for Clunkers was a sales phenomenon. Government incentives of up to $4,500 sent bargain hunters rushing to car lots in July and August. All told, nearly 700,000 vehicles were sold under the program. Now, dealers are paying a price.
September is going to be probably the worst month of the year as a result of what they commonly refer to as cash for clunkers hangover.
Alan Spitzer owns 24 dealerships in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. He says one reason sales slumped last month is because clunkers pulled in shoppers who would have bought later in the year anyway.
They pushed business ahead from people that would have traded in their clunkers in September, possibly in October and November, and shoved that business into August. So it obviously, by definition, takes away from, you know, the business in the future.
Spitzer thinks those buyers made up anywhere from 20% to half of his clunker business. Another reason for the steep drop in September sales, cash for clunkers wiped out dealer inventories. So when shoppers showed up last month, there wasn't much to buy.
Most of our lots were completely empty. I had lots in some of our dealerships with literally seven cars left in the inventory.
That's Tammy Darvish. She's an executive with Dar Cars Automotive, one of the top dealers in the Washington, D.C. area. Even with last month's drop-off, Darvish thinks cash for clunkers was good for dealers.
It created a lot of traffic in our showrooms. It excited the employees. It got them focused again on, you know, things turning around.
But she doesn't think it was so good for the Detroit car companies it was designed to help. Darvish says most of her customers traded in American clunkers for foreign cars. She says that will come back to haunt Detroit.
When these customers get back into the trade cycle again, they're not going to go back to a Detroit domestic vehicle. Take Toyota, for example. I mean, their loyalty is almost 80%. So we know that at least 80% of those customers will end up staying in a Toyota product.
So do you think cash for clunkers actually helped General Motors and Chrysler?
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, there was one good thing.
They got rid of a whole bunch of old product that had been sitting around for a while.
And moving those Detroit cars off dealer lots helped put thousands of auto workers back on the job. Analysts say that judging from the buying frenzy, the government incentives were higher than needed. Jeremy Anwill runs Edmunds.com, the car consumer website.
The right way to do this would have not been to have had a $3,500 or a $4,500 incentive, but maybe to have, even half that. Whenever you get in and start sort of distorting the marketplace, there's all kinds of unintended consequences, and many of them are not positive.
A month after cash for clunkers, the auto business finds itself, in some ways, back where it started. Analysts say that extended across 12 months, those weak September sales would amount to less than 9.5 million sales annually. That's the lowest level since April. And down dramatically from the industry's glory days earlier this decade, when annual sales were around 17 million. Frank Langford, NPR News, Washington.